This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Summit, 343's live educational networking event for coaches and members of the ambitious soccer community. The Summit will be taking place at the Palms Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, July 29th through 31st, 2016. Please visit 343coaching.fm for more information. Thank you. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the 343 podcast. My name is John Pronich, and I am your host. And on today's episode, we have a chat with Sean. And when I asked Sean to be a guest on this podcast, I did not know much about Detroit's soccer scene. But what I learned, and what I hope Sean and I highlight in our talk, is that Detroit's soccer scene is absolutely thriving. And it's no wonder that there are rumors of MLS moving to town. I mean, what big shot billionaire wouldn't want a piece of this thriving pie? But I must say, kudos to the people of Detroit for building something genuine. And kudos to those same people for staying genuine in the midst of the news that a couple of NBA owners are trying to buy their way to the top of the food chain and leapfrogging right over what this amazing group of supporters and families and coaches and players and owners have been building for years in Detroit. So today's episode is an interview with an investor, which we will explain through the interview, with an investor of Detroit City FC. And this is a story of how things got started there and kind of an update on the state of Detroit soccer today. And I don't think there's a better time to tell this story than right now, which at the time of this recording is the week that Leicester City FC has just won the Premier League title, and also the same week that Atletico Madrid has secured a spot in the Champions League final once again. And it's an exciting time, very exciting time for world football. So I hope you enjoy my chat with Sean Grogan and this story of Detroit's soccer scene. Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of the 343 podcast. We have Sean Grogan on the show today. Sean is with Detroit City FC in a number of different capacities, but we will let Sean introduce himself and tell you exactly what he is up to over in Detroit. Sean, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thanks for having me, John. I help run along with two other guys. I run the independent podcast about the team and a whole lot of other local sort of media coverage. It's a fourth tier team. There's not really much in the way of actual media coverage. So a lot of us have taken it upon ourselves to sort of build that around the team. And that's what I do a lot of.
Now, for those of you who are unaware of what's kind of happening in Detroit right now, and this is the reason that that sparked the interest in getting Sean or somebody from DCFC on the show, but MLS has announced, or I don't know if it's officially MLS has announced, but there's been talk of expansion for MLS into the city of Detroit. And for those of you that don't know the story of Detroit City FC, you're probably unaware of this great supporter base that exists and this really awesome soccer culture in Detroit. That was the reason for bringing Sean on the show, to give you guys a little bit of a background of what's happening out there, how it started, what's going on currently, and to give you an inside look of what it's like to be in a lower division or a lower tier in the United States. So, Sean, maybe start with a little bit about what DCFC is.
All right, so we play in the NPSL, which along with the PDL comprises sort of the default fourth division in the United States. It's sort of a grassroots club, began in 2012. out of, there was a local co-ed rec league that it actually started out of. I don't know how many teams worldwide even can say that they started out of a co-ed rec league, but basically the one owner had started that league, and it's a neighborhood league, so each neighborhood in Detroit sort of has a team, and then everybody, all the teams play against each other, and everybody goes out for beer afterwards, and then there's a community service portion of the league, too. So, like, this year, each team is coaching an elementary school team in the city of Detroit to go along with their league fee. But from that league, one of the owners started talking to some of his buddies. There's no team in the city of Detroit, and they decided to create a team. They picked basically the cheapest league option they could, threw it together, all very, very do-it-yourself. In the first year, they brought one of the owner's lawnmowers to the field and were cutting the grass with the lawnmower themselves. And it's just sort of grown from there.
And remind me, Sean, put maybe a timestamp on some of this stuff. Was it 2010, 2012? When was this league popping up?
So that league, I believe, started in 2010, and Detroit City FC began in 2012. So it all sort of grew pretty quickly out of that.
And when you say neighborhood league or neighborhood teams, maybe describe that. Is there teams playing at, like, local schools, like neighborhood schools or high schools, or what is like a game day look like for the league? Maybe in its formative years too.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different fields and a couple of different things that they run, a couple different sessions, but essentially, like, people sign up for their neighborhood, and then you can only have five people who don't live in the city of Detroit or a couple of the really close cities on your roster, so that you're not bringing in people from ringers from a long way away. So each team name sort of has a neighborhood name. So I play on a team called Historic Boston Edison, which is a neighborhood in Detroit. There's others for Corktown, Midtown, whatever neighborhood names there are in Detroit, Lafayette Park. There's teams for that. There's a couple of different fields, usually hour-long games. The fields aren't that great, but everybody has a great time playing in these games. And they're on Tuesday nights. They go for a couple all night long. Everybody's out there playing on the fields at Fort Wayne. There's a couple other fields they play games at, because there's, like, I don't know the exact number of teams off the top of my head, but it's like maybe 50 or so that play in this league.
Wow. And is it within the league, is there divisions as well?
Yeah, there's four divisions this year, and they sort of try and roughly place themselves where they, how good they think they are.
And is it up to them to stay in that league, or is there a chance within your guys' league for moving up and down this structure?
There's not, like, a formal promotion relegation structure. I mean, the teams turn over a lot each year, and it's all sort of informal. But basically, I know my team moved themselves up a division for this season. So they sort of let teams decide for themselves.
For sure. And just as a reminder to everybody, this is just a neighborhood city league in one city in Detroit.
Yep.
And what you're describing to me, I guess I'm having a hard time connecting with what I've seen from DCFC in videos and on social media and whatnot, because what you're describing maybe sounds like, you know, yeah, a pickup league on Tuesday nights. But when I see videos of Detroit City FC, I see a packed stadium with flares and scarves and a supporter section and all kinds of crazy stuff. So maybe, how did that come out of this league?
Yeah, so they played in this league for like the first 2 years, and then the guy who started it, his name is Sean Mann. So he met actually on a plane flight, actually by chance, sort of met an owner of Chattanooga FC who played in the NPSL and started talking about their respective soccer involvements, and the guy from Chattanooga convinced him to start a team. And they started this men's league or team in NPSL, and a lot of the original fan base sort of and volunteers and everything sort of grew out of this neighborhood league. He pulled some guys who were friends with him to throw in the money for the league fee. That's the group of owners now. And I know a lot of other people who are either fans or have taken on some official capacity in the club now, who were playing in that league when the team started.
And when DCFC made that jump to the NPSL, where were those games taking place, and what was the supporter section? What did that look like at that time?
So there's a stadium in downtown Detroit. It's a high school football stadium at Catholic High School. The official capacity on the thing is only 3,000 people. So the first year attendances started out about 1,000, so it was about a third full. And as more and more people started telling their friends about it, they grew to the point where last year we were fitting nearly like 3,800, nearly 4,000 people into a 3,000-person stadium, standing room only. If I'm being perfectly honest, the field was awful, like really bad divoted grass from high school football and stuff. Like I mentioned earlier, that had to mow the field the first year, paint our own lines. But it didn't matter because we were playing soccer, and that was there hadn't been a team in the city of Detroit for quite some time. So I think everybody really latched onto it, and it just didn't matter how bad the field was. We actually weren't allowed to use the field for U.S. Open Cup games because it's too narrow. So we had to find a different venue for some of those things. But it was allowed for NPSL league play. By the end of last year, we were consistently turning people away at the gate, and that meant that the search was on for a bigger stadium.
And in the information that you sent me that I was reading over before this interview, something that caught my eye was that, yeah, you guys started to max out this stadium, and on the hunt for a new stadium, you guys began to collect donations from supporters, and that you guys were able to raise $750,000 for a new stadium. That blows my mind. And I'm curious how you guys, as this small fourth division club, went about, number one, asking for donations, or if you even had to ask, maybe they were just volunteered, and then how you went about collecting that and then using it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the process, but maybe speak a little bit about that.
Yep. There was a new law passed in Michigan in the last couple of years that allowed for community investment, and it was only Michigan residents. So, like, for instance, like my sister who moved to Louisville couldn't invest in this thing. That was kind of unfortunate for some of our supporters who have moved away, but they set it up. It was one of the first things to be run under this new law. So they set up different levels of donation, and it works sort of like you would imagine like a Kickstarter or something, except the key difference is in a Kickstarter you just get, you know, your reward and the finished product, but in this case it's actually an investment. So for instance, I invested in the stadium campaign. So I put my money in, and theoretically over 5 years, I believe it is, I will get that money back with some interest paid out of the additional revenue from the new stadium. So what that really meant for me as an investor was that I was able to put a lot more of my own money in, because there is an expectation that it will be returned over a period of time. So I think that $750,000 figure was really helped out by that fact. If it had just been a donation, I don't know how much I could have given, but so it doesn't give the supporters any equity in the club, per se, but certainly something that all the supporters felt very connected to.
No, Sean, I have to ask, how many people were involved in this $750,000 figure? So you said that you're one of I'm guessing many people that invested in the club. Do you know about how many people were part of that?
The official number is 500 and something, I believe. So some of that is from local corporate interests. So some of it's not from individuals, and other pieces of it, people sort of pooled their money together to raise more. So it's hard to get an exact number. I know a lot of people who they're on the official count will only show as one investment, but like they pooled three or four people's money together. So
for sure. And immediately my thought goes to, that's 500 people now that are invested in this club and would love to see this club grow into the third, second, and then eventually first division team, I'd imagine. So I'm really curious, when you see news like these two basketball owners wanting to get involved with MLS in the city of Detroit, what was your initial feeling? How did you react to that?
I think there's a lot of skepticism, just because the history sort of Detroit's financial struggles, that's very high on a lot of people's mind, and traditionally all the new stadium projects have included some form of public funding. There was a lot of skepticism around that, and then a lot of people who, that I see that out of our local media, just regardless, even if they didn't know about our team, I see that sort of reaction. And I think a lot of people who are involved in the club deeply currently already feel very, I don't know, they want to see the thing they've been working on, that they've been dedicating all their time, money, effort, they want to see that thing grow, and it sort of feels like someone is coming in and starting something up that is going to limit that growth, and not necessarily have proof that they're going to offer a better product, that they're going to win more fans, that they're going to connect to the community better. So that's what I've been seeing a lot of reactions of lately.
Yeah, and I guess it's nice to, or not nice, but it's, you have to note that it wouldn't be another team coming into the city of Detroit to compete with you for a spot. It would be somebody coming in and leapfrogging you to that spot where you guys have been trying to build towards. And that, I guess that leads me to the question, what is the ultimate goal for DCFC? Was there a goal that was announced upon starting DCFC? Was that part of the business plan, was to grow into an eventual MLS franchise or Division I club, or was it just to stay a city league?
I don't think at the start they went into it with any aspirations of a higher division, but it sort of caught on so quickly that people started pushing for it. And a lot of the recent discussion within the supporters community with the owners and everything over the last year has really sort of centered on how to go to a higher division, how to become a full-time pro club, because the league we're playing in right now is only really a summer league, and there's not really all that many options. It's sort of a lot of regulations on what it takes to jump to a higher level club. that are going to force a lot of changes in many ways if we hope to accomplish that. So that's an ongoing, everyday sort of discussion within the club right now, is how to achieve that and how to do that in the best possible manner without changing.
You just touched on something that I guess I wasn't aware of or clear of, but it's this is a summer league now, basically, that Detroit City FC is playing in. And I know I saw something in the information you sent me beforehand about the players, that they're amateurs, not able to be paid in some cases, or in all cases. I'm not sure if there's a fine line there. So I'm imagining that this team is comprised of maybe college players or maybe even high school players. Maybe describe the roster a little bit, and then I want to lead that into the actual coaching and the technical staff of the club as well.
Yep. So, yes, the team has a lot of NCAA players in it, and also older guys. Not so much high school players. I think we've only ever had one player make the first team straight out of high school.
Wait, real quick. So when you say first team, there's a second team?
There's a reserve. Okay. That they compete against some other local teams. They don't really compete in a league, but they sort of run a reserve side to keep fitness and keep evaluating players.
To me, this is just amazing that there's a small league in Detroit City, or in the city of Detroit, and they have a first and a second team, or a first and a reserve team. Okay, continue on. I just needed to butt in real quick.
Yeah. So then we've also got some older guys who aren't NCAA players, but NCAA regulations mean that those NCAA players cannot play on any team where other players are being paid.
Oof, so I didn't know that either.
That forces everybody to be amateur. So when you're trying to grow, it's really sort of tough to get over that hump, because normally you would think a logical path to progression would be, okay, I've got these NCAA players, I'm going to start paying some of my players, and I can gradually, as my revenue grows, I can ramp up the amount that the amount I spend on my roster. Well, you can't really do that here. It's all amateur. So, and everything has to be within NCAA regulations. So it gets really sort of difficult. And I guess another piece of the NCAA regulations, the head coach coaches at Michigan State University. So we can't use any Michigan State players because he can't coach with them in the summer. And then similarly, on the other side, we've had players that we can't use because they coach at a college. So we had one player who was coaching at Saginaw Valley State University. Another who came back, he had played a couple years pro and then joined University of Michigan coaching staff. But we use Michigan players, and so he would have made his own players ineligible to play with our team in the summer.
Wow. And that was actually one of my other questions, was regarding the coaching staff. So obviously this is a team of amateurs and now a league that runs mostly through the summer. So this isn't their only gig. And it sounds like one coach is at NCAA first division level. How big is the coaching staff, and yeah, what else do they do?
The coaching staff has grown from last year. It was three people, and this year it's five. So the head coach is Ben Pierman. He's an assistant coach at Michigan State University. The assistant coach, Adil Salmoni, is he's got an A license. He works with a lot of with a local youth club with the rest of his year. Goalkeeper coach is also at Michigan State University as a goalkeeper coach. He's a former player for the team, but he sort of retired now. Then Our captain from last year also retired, and he was added to the coaching staff. He's starting off in his coaching career. And then one last assistant coach, Colby Cunningham, he played pro for a little bit and then came back and started coaching in local youth leagues. So a variety of experiences, but all of them are, they coach you around, so.
And Sean, just real quick, I want to go back and kind of just repaint the picture with all the information we have now. So this small neighborhood league starts in the city of Detroit, and you're playing at these crappy little fields and on Tuesday nights, and somebody meets somebody on a flight, and that sparks an idea to maybe take one of these teams to the next level, and that team goes into NPSL and starts drawing fans and fans and fans, and eventually you max out the stadium where you guys were currently playing, and at the time it sounds like maybe you started out with a coach and an assistant coach, and now this is in a situation where we're at a first team and a reserve team with a staff of five coaches playing at a stadium that now holds upwards of maybe 4,000 people.
The new stadium, I think for this year, the figure is going to be 7,000, and then there's a couple sections they won't be able to renovate in time and make them completely safe. So I think the upwards capacity over the next couple of years is going to be 10,000.
That is amazing, Sean. That is amazing. So maybe talk a little bit about the new stadium and what you guys got with that $750,000 that was raised by Michigan residents.
So there's a stadium. It's in a city called Hamtramck, Michigan, which, a little background on Hamtramck, it's started out the Polish enclave, but since then it's gotten a lot of immigrants every generation coming in, so it's this hugely multicultural city. It's completely surrounded by the city of Detroit, so it's in many ways functions as sort of a neighborhood of Detroit. It's on Detroit water and everything, and so there's this old stadium. It was built during the Great Depression, and it's an old concrete stadium that's fallen largely into disrepair. I think before they broke through the underside of the stadium with the sledgehammers to examine things underneath, they had bricked it off, and nobody had been underneath it for 11 years. Really bad repair when we first started it. I mean, there's holes in the concrete. There was a bush growing in one part of the stands. Broken bleachers. Everything. Lighting wasn't so great. So it is currently mid-renovation right now. I went down, I saw it this weekend. Again, I've been keeping an eye on it through the entire process. They've started pouring the concrete to fix a lot of the sections that were broken. A lot of the new benches have been put in, lighting fixed. So hopefully by the end, it probably won't be anything brand new looking, but it's going to hold a lot more people, and I'm excited for it.
I'm literally amazed, Sean. And one thing that, again, amazes me, that maybe people aren't familiar with, but I'm going to make sure that I link to everything so that way people can actually see and experience DCFC from afar. But your guys' marketing and online presence is remarkable. The graphics that you guys put out are top-notch, and one thing that really kind of caught my eye is that you guys either live stream or provide streams to recorded matches via your Vimeo account. I'm not sure if there's a YouTube as well, but do you guys have any sort of like TV deal or something going on, or is it that just for fun for the club?
There is a online stream that's produced. The announcers on it, everything, like camera, different camera switches. It's very professional looking. The announcer is a local announcer who does a lot of college sports for Open University. And so they hired him to do our broadcast. And then at the end of last year, the local Fox Sports Detroit picked it up and streamed one of our games on their website. And then I've seen they also play it on one of the local TV stations. They started picked it up and started playing games. So that's an ever growing and evolving thing too.
It's remarkable, Sean. I can't begin to describe how amazing that is for you guys to have that presence that you guys do in your city, and hopefully it continues to grow. I don't see you guys going on any other track but up at this point. With that, is there anything upcoming for DCFC that people should know about, or it sounds like you guys are ramping up for the 2016 season?
Yep. So preseason has started. I said it's a short summer season. All the NCAA players get released officially on May 1st, I believe. So they started the preseason with some of the older guys and guys who are trying to make the team a couple weeks ago. And now they're adding some of the NCAA players into the mix. Last preseason friendly is this Saturday, and then straight into their first game, competitive game of the season, first round of the U.S. Open Cup against another local fourth-tier team, the Michigan Bucks from the PDL.
That's awesome.
And then the regular season is very, very packed in, as you would expect with a short season. I think like it's going to be a whirlwind the first couple of weeks. There's like 5 games in 14 days or something ridiculous. So I imagine a lot of roster rotation will come from that, because you can't play a game with 1 day break and expect someone to play 180 minutes before. That's not something that happens at any level.
Real quick, how big is the roster?
That's always a good question. There's always more players in the reserve squad and stuff that aren't announced. The announced roster is usually around 30 players. And because of sort of the nature of the amateurism of the league, you sort of welcome some new players in the middle of the season and see a couple others have life changes or whatever, and they've got to go. You're not paying them salary. Other things come first sometimes. So there's quite often a lot of turnover because of things like that.
Definitely. All right, Sean, any last words that you want to leave with our listeners?
Can't think of anything right now.
Where can people find DCFC online or on their phones or other locations?
So the website is at detcityfc.com. The Twitter is DetroitCityFC.com. Other than that, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other information you can probably find if you just Google the team.
Awesome. And I'll make sure I'll snag some links from you, and we'll put those in the show notes for everybody, so that way everybody can check it out. I highly recommend going to the Vimeo page and looking at some of the match footage, as well as some of the promotional material that you guys put out there, because, like I said, it's top-notch. All right, Sean, thank you for joining us on the show, and we look forward to seeing the progress of Detroit City FC, and we wish you guys the best of luck.
All right, thank you for having me, John.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Summit, 343's live educational networking event for coaches and members of the ambitious soccer community. The summit will be taking place at the Palms Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, July 29th through 31st, 2016. Please visit 343coaching.fm for more information. Thank you.